From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week at RIT, where freshmen were arriving for a new school year, and RIT, along with many campuses, wants students to think about issues related to sexual misconduct and assault. Now, to do that, RIT put together a program titled Alcohol and Chill, with the agenda focusing on sexual assault awareness, prevention, bystander education, and risk reduction. One slide in particular has kind of gone viral, and before I proceed, please know that some of our discussion this hour will include terms that might occasionally sound crude. It's probably not a great hour for kids to hear. There's certainly some adult themes, so just be forewarned on that. Now, the program at RIT offered many ideas, but as I mentioned, it was one slide in particular that's getting a lot of attention. That slide included the idea that if someone feels like they can't control their sexual desire with a partner who is not consenting, then that person can masturbate in order to avoid committing sexual assault. The program stated, quote, self-gratification can prevent sexual assault. And as I said, the accompanying image was, it was meant to be a little humorous, maybe a little crude, but also to get students thinking. And RIT thought it was an important message, but some critics have disagreed, saying that the slide is problematic in many ways. This hour, we want to have a conversation about that message and about our expectations for men in particular and about sexual assault on campus. Let me go ahead and welcome our guests for the hour. Darcy Lane Williams is the director of RIT's Center for Women and Gender. And Darcy, thank you for being here. Really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
Also here is Morgan Levy, who is the Title IX coordinator at the University of Rochester. Morgan, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Karen Vicks is the Title IX coordinator at Nazareth College. Karen, welcome.
Thanks.
And Tamara Kenny is Title IX coordinator at SUNY Geneseo. Tamara, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Darcy, why don't you take us back to how, not just the single image, we'll get to that, but just the purpose of this presentation and this program and the goals that RIT had for this.
Okay, thank you. So we want to make sure that our incoming freshmen are prepared for situations they might encounter. And we know that comprehensive sexual education is not available to many of our students. In addition, a lot of families don't talk to their young people about sex. And so what happens is they come to school, they're put in adult situations with minimal supervision, and they're asked to navigate these situations with no understanding. And so we didn't want to have your typical program about rape. We actually told students at the beginning, we're not going to talk to you about rape. We're going to talk to you about consent. Everyone knows that rape is wrong. We've all watched enough Law & Order SVU to know that rape is wrong. We want to talk to you about what do you do when you're in a situation with a partner where you're trying to figure out what's going on? What are they communicating to you? What are you communicating to them? How do you get consent? How do you give consent? We find that the majority of students are not prepared for the situations they find themselves in on both sides. And so this program was designed to cover all of the Title IX topics, not just sexual assault, but also harassment, stalking, and dating violence. And so it was an interactive program. We had approximately 2,800 students there. And one of the segments, we talked about what consent may look like when you don't have a clear yes and when you don't have a clear no, and what's the yellow in between look like. And so prior to that slide in question popping up, we talked about apps that students meet each other on, like Grindr and Tinder, where you might get a little keyboard courage and start talking about all the things you're going to do with this other person. And then you get in a room and maybe things change. We talked about how consent can be withdrawn at any time. And even if someone has, you know, gone into details about what's going to happen, once you get in a room with that person, you need to get consent at that time. There are no guarantees and no one owes you anything. And so that slide out of context is very confusing. But it's important to mention that we have live captioning at all of our programs, and because we have a large population of deaf and hard of hearing students. So we want to make sure all of our programs are accessible. And so at that point in time when that photo was taken, that was live captioning, real-time captioning, of what was being said at the time. And what was being said at the time is, if you're with a partner and your partner has decided to stop whatever it is that you have agreed upon to do, that you do not pressure that partner. You stop and you leave. And if you find that you are still in a position where you want to do something sexually, then you do something sexually alone, and it is not your partner's responsibility to for your sexual gratification. So that is the context that was missing for that slide.
Okay. Was it a mistake at all?
I guess if we had to do it over again, we might use a different image. I don't think we would take away the acronym. We need to give students tools to use when they leave. And traditionally, our sexual assault prevention education programs have consisted of a survivor coming in telling their story. And not to dismiss any survivor stories, we know that they are impactful. But when you're dealing with young people, you have to reach them where they're at. And so we would have a survivor come in and tell a story about what happened to them. And the students would leave thinking, wow, that was really horrible what happened to them. I'll make sure that's not me. That wouldn't be me. And for, they're going to look at the person that committed this act as, well, that's a rapist. Of course, that's what rapists do. And the students are leaving with no more tools than they walked in the door with. And that's not effective. We need to give the students tools they can use in real life situations.
Do you endorse the idea that self-gratification can prevent sexual assault?
No. And like I said, it was taken, I believe it was taken out of context. What we're saying is your own sexuality, you are responsible for. No partner is responsible for your...
They don't owe you anything.
They don't owe you anything. And I don't care if you've got a text message where the person goes from A to Z what they're going to do with you. They have the right to change their mind. And honestly, one of the common rape myths we hear from both people that have been assaulted as well as people that have assaulted people is that once you get started, it's too late to go back. And that is not the case. There needs to be active consent for every part of the sexual experience. From, as people say, soup to nuts, there needs to be active consent the entire time. And you can't assume that anything is okay if you're not communicating with your partner.
Well, the concern I have is that, because it sounds now like you're sort of retracting the idea that self-gratification can prevent sexual assault, but you are saying that your partner's not responsible for it. And if there's a pause or a change in intent or consent, if consent is withdrawn, which can happen at any moment, mm-hmm. they are not responsible for your sexual satisfaction. I understand that
right.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
The implication that I think the slide had was that some people, probably men more often, but people can be so invested in that sexual process that they will not be able to take no for an answer. And certainly we know that does happen. And that you could simply cure this with self-gratification. Does that create an image of men? Shouldn't the message to men simply be, forget that. You're an adult. If you don't have consent, then the answer is no. If you don't have a yes, then the answer is no. Shouldn't it be that simple?
It should be, but I think a lot of the response that we're getting where people are really upset, it's coming from sexually mature people. You're talking about very young people who may be going into their first sexual experience.
But they're adults. They're adults.
They are adults, but they're adults in age, yes. But these are sometimes students who have never had a sexual experience, so they've never had to navigate those conversations. And it's important for us to state that the image and the slide was intended to be gender neutral. The entire presentation was gender neutral. We wanted to make sure that we didn't identify one gender as being the ones that we're targeting the program towards. And so I'm not going to say what was on the slide. You can say it if you'd like, but it's gender neutral. When we're talking about masturbation, we purposely used that phrase as opposed to other ones because you do immediately associate it with men. And so we chose the words that we chose carefully. And the entire presentation was gender neutral. It wasn't aimed at men. We know that everyone is impacted by sexual assault on both sides. And so we didn't want it to seem as if we were targeting men. The idea was never that men can't control themselves. The idea was that we have choices at any given time when we have a sexual interaction with another person. And if we just simply tell people, don't assault people and don't give them any other options on what to do, I think that we're doing you know, doing students a disservice. So if we're saying to sexually inexperienced young people, don't rape someone, it's bad, and that's all we're saying, what are we telling them to do? So we had a whole discussion about consent, what that looks like, what actual conversations may look like, what someone may say when they do want to do something with you, what someone may say when they're hesitant, and how you need to communicate with your partner and pay attention. And we also talked about times where you can't get consent no matter what your partner is saying, when they're asleep, when they're under the influence of drugs or alcohol. And so we wanted to give students tools that they could use when they left that program, that if they find themselves in a sexual situation which isn't going where they want it to go, that they have options and that their sexual satisfaction is their own responsibility.
All right, before I turn to our other guests for their thoughts, I want to share one of the comments that I read, and there have been hundreds, if not thousands, in social media spots. This is from Reddit, a user named Jensen, and this is how some people, in this case a man, took this image. He writes, "Doesn't this weirdly normalize rape? It presents it as such a common urge that guys should come up with practical ways to avoid their rapey thoughts. I know that rape is a problem, but this seems really silly, and I think it does more damage than good. Like, I imagine some young woman on a quad passing out flyers and making announcements. Okay, guys, just a reminder, no raping. It's like they're equating it to something like texting while driving, which is a widespread problem that many people are doing. But we're not monsters. I remember when I was a kid, if our teacher had an attitude that the boys will just be boys and act like animals, the boys in the class were more likely to behave that way because that's how they were treated. So I wonder if this treatment of men might actually lead to more rapes." That's a user on Reddit named Jensen responding to it. What would you say to that?
What I would say to that is, again, the assumption is that we are talking specifically to men, and we are not. Also, I think that in the past, we have said, don't rape people. So if we had gone the traditional route of having maybe a survivor up there to tell their story, I don't think that people would identify with that. In the past, we haven't necessarily given people tools that they can use. We've had the typical, don't get yourself raped, and here's how you can do that, and don't rape people. We haven't talked about, okay, here's a situation where things may be going in a direction that you didn't anticipate. How do you communicate to your partner that you've changed your mind or that you don't want to do something? And the partner, how do you know that this person is no longer desiring to go down this path with you? And so our desire was to give students tools that they can use, regardless of gender. If they're in a situation where they think things are going to go one way and they don't, and to let them know your partner at any point in time can change their mind. So it's not about, okay, you have these desires to rape and masturbation is going to make those desires go away. We know that there are people that will rape people regardless of the amount of education they've gotten because it's a choice. Assaulting someone is a choice. But we want to make sure that if it's a student, they can't ever say, I didn't know. I didn't know I couldn't do this. I didn't know that I couldn't have sex with someone who was highly intoxicated. I didn't know that I couldn't have sex with someone who was passed out. They weren't saying no. Yeah, they weren't saying yes, but they weren't saying no. I didn't know that if my partner freezes up that I should stop and check in with them to say, hey, are you okay? Are you still all right with this? You know, I didn't know if my partner looks out the window, that might be a signal that maybe I should stop and see if they still want to do this. I mean, we've had many students in situations where, you know, they've been suspended from school because they made a mistake, and they're in a situation where they're telling us a little too late, I didn't know. I never had any education about this. No one ever told me what to expect when having sex.
Okay, let's go around the table and ask our guests who are Title IX coordinators at various local institutions. Morgan Levy from the University of Rochester. What did you make of that slide and that admonition to students?
So I think when I first saw the slide, I had the reaction that many of us had, which was, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think that that's one of the unfortunate things with social media, is that we can take one quick picture completely out of context and make all sorts of assumptions. I think that the explanation of why that slide was up there makes a lot of sense, sort of reinforcing that message that it's not your partner's responsibility to make sure that you are sexually gratified, that that is your responsibility. So I think now hearing the full story of it, I completely understand why that was part of the conversation. And I'm glad that you're having the opportunity to talk about it. And I also am glad that there's an opportunity for us just to talk about education on this topic in general, because it's something that all of us, all of the local schools and universities, spend a good amount of time working with our new and incoming student populations on to make sure that our campus communities are safe.
Tamara Kenny from SUNY Geneseo, Title IX Coordinator. What do you make of it?
I would agree with Morgan. I think that understanding the context of the slide now makes a lot of sense. And I think the RIT's approach is a very good one. We do spend a great amount of time talking about consent, how to get consent, what does consent look like, so that our students can make the best choices that they're making, but also encouraging students to be thinking about these things prior to being in that situation where now it's a little more difficult to understand whether I have consent or not consent.
Okay. Thoughts?
Again, thinking the same thing with knowing that there was more to the context of the slides and that there would be, additional material around it. It certainly makes a lot of sense. And, agreeing with everyone else at the table, we spend, I'm thinking of poster series that we have out right now about how to ask for consent. And, a lot of times students will say, I just didn't know what to say. And to just come out with, well, these are some basic general things that you can say and to understand. It's about communication, and a lot of what we talked about is students have never been in these experiences before, and to teach them and to have these conversations that maybe they weren't getting at home or maybe they weren't getting in high school.
All right, let me take our first phone call, and it comes from Ben in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Ben.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. So I had 2 points I wanted to touch on this. One, Evan, earlier in the conversation, you said something along the lines of, well, they're adults, in response to, well, why can't this just be seen as wrong? It's right, they're adults. I feel like the problem is age is not necessarily equal to maturity. At age 18, I was very different. I'm 27 now. I'm very different at age 18. And just because someone becomes that sort of magical age doesn't immediately mean that they're going to be fully ready to make all those decisions. It's not like a switch gets flicked. The second note, I have to feel that when I see a lot of sort of the furor about this, while I understand what was originally said with the slide, I have to feel at least some of this is coming from the fact that we're still uncomfortable as a society talking about masturbation to a certain degree at all. I mean, within the scientific community, certainly, but colloquially, this is not something people really talk about. And one of the things when I heard this story, it sounded to me like what part of the intent was the idea of masturbation reducing desire in that moment, draining off desire so that decision-making can come back to a more, a less sexually charged area in the immediate aftermath. I could be wrong. That's how I interpreted it, but that's just the comment I wanted to make.
All right, Ben, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate that. Go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Ben. I appreciate that. So yes, what we were saying at the time was, if you're with a partner and you have all these expectations, you're really excited, you're ready for things to go to where you think they'll go, and the partner says, I don't want to do this, I'm not ready for this, I've changed my mind, you have options. And it is not your partner's responsibility to make sure that things go the way you want them to go. So at that point, pressuring your partner, which is something that we often see in cases, where we don't often see cases of forcible rape. We see cases where someone continues to push for a certain activity to happen, and they attempt to wear the partner down, and maybe the partner does finally say, okay, fine. And it's not that they really truly want to do it. It's that they don't believe that this person is going to stop asking. And so we see that a lot. And we also have people that process after the fact and say, well, I did promise this. I did promise this. I did say this is what we're going to do. And so I can see why they wanted this. The message was that masturbation is a very normal, healthy part of human sexuality for all genders, and that if things don't go the way you want them to go and you have expectations and you find yourself sexually frustrated, it is a healthy outlet. And yes, a lot of people are not taught that growing up. Some people are taught that you'll grow hair on your palms. I've heard that. I went to a private Catholic all-girl high school. We didn't learn any of these things. And so we understand that this is the first time people may be hearing this, especially from college administrators. It's strange. But we know that lots of students appreciate that they can talk to us about these things and have that knowledge that they didn't have before.
All right. So on that subject, thank you, Ben. Gary agrees. He writes to the program and says, it's a denial of our biology to treat young adults as mature adults. Male brains are not fully developed until their early 20s and don't fully comprehend long-term consequences until then. Are the critics of this program expecting too much of young males with natural urges? Doesn't RIT have a responsibility to teach young men they are responsible for their actions? And again, it goes back to goes a little against what Darcy's saying. It was not just aimed at men, you said, but a lot of our listeners are taking this as an admonition to men.
I think they're taking it, they're looking at it as a message geared towards men because look at what our society tells us about rape. Society tells us that rape is some creepy man, usually a man, in an alley that snatches people and forcibly rapes them. When you see an episode of Law & Order SVU, and I keep bringing that up because it's a whole show about sexual assault and rape, you rarely see a female or a woman portrayed as the person that's being accused of rape on the show. And so I think it's because society believes that men are always the perpetrators of rape. And that is not the case. We have men assaulting women, women assaulting women, women assaulting men, men assaulting men. But when we look at statistics, the most, when it comes to numbers, the highest numbers of reported sexual assaults are men assaulting women. That's just the reality.
All right. And I just want to jump in and say for our listeners, if you're just joining us, you're hearing Darcy Lane Williams, director of RIT's Center for Women and Gender, and we're talking about one slide out of 77 that RIT thought was maybe taken out of context, but it led to an uproar as they advised especially new students on campus about ways to make sure that they are acting appropriately, and that the admonition that self-gratification, masturbation, can prevent sexual assault had a lot of people in an uproar. What you're hearing from Darcy, and frankly from the Title IX coordinators at other universities here, is that this is an issue that's not necessarily about, it's about sexual assault, but sexual assault is not always, I guess what I'm trying to say, Darcy, is a little bit what she just said, which is sometimes the question of consent doesn't get revisited or gets lost and is not appropriately addressed. So I am not at all sitting here saying, you know, some rape, I don't want to get myself in any trouble there. I guess what I'm trying to say is this is an understanding that consent matters. It can be withdrawn no matter what was said or texted beforehand. It can be revisited, and it matters at every step. And that in that way, RIT thought, well, maybe the public was taking things out of context here. If you're just joining us, this is a conversation that probably isn't great for young kids, but let's continue with a phone call from Amy in Fairport who wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi there. I heard you mention, so I have 4 college-age children, 2 girls and 2 boys. So I think that we do young men a disservice when we try to make things too gender neutral, especially in this case. I mean, you said yourself, the majority of sexual assaults are perpetrated by men against women. So I think in an effort to be too gender neutral, we're missing the point. And I think teaching young men how to accept consent, how to behave when consent is removed, is different than what that slide shows. Now, I'm sure there were 77 slides and you could take that out of context, but if you have students that you really feel have no sexual education, no general sex ed coming to college, how many of those slides were general sexual education?
So it's important to mention that we send out an email to all of our incoming freshmen with a 2.5-hour online course for them to take. So a lot of what we want them to know is covered in that course. And then the purpose of the on-campus program is to continue the conversation, and actually they have opportunities to continue the conversation throughout the year. I do understand what you're saying about targeting or programming in education targeted specifically at young men. But I think that that's what we've been doing for a very long time. But the way that we've done it is problematic. You have to meet young people where they are. No one wants to be seen as a potential rapist. And unfortunately, a lot of the education that has been geared towards young men, that's the picture that's painted, that you are a potential rapist and we are trying to educate you so you don't rape people. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want someone coming at me that way. I have three children, a 16.
Well, no, but I think what your slide did, even out of context, is it minimalized the, you know, the impact of sexual assault, as if, you know, all this, all a guy needs to do, or a girl for that matter, all you have to do is just go have an orgasm, and you'll just feel so much better. You won't want to assault anyone. And, well, and so I think using a character from Winnie the Pooh and coming up with an acronym for masturbation, you're marginalizing the situation as a whole. I don't want my daughters to sit in that room in any college, and I've been through four of them at four different colleges, and I sat through RITs. So I just think you made a huge mistake in marginalizing it with a cartoon and an acronym. Can you imagine being an 18-year-old woman sitting in that room going, oh, all I have to do is tell him to go masturbate and he won't assault me? I just think you missed the mark. You can give comprehensive sexual education. You can teach what consent means and doesn't mean, and that it can be taken away in a way more respectful way than with a Winnie the Pooh cartoon. I think you guys really, really fell down on the job.
Amy, thanks for the phone call. I certainly appreciate it. Go ahead, Darcy.
And I appreciate Amy's perspective on it. I think that for those of us who have been teaching sexual assault prevention education for years, we check in with students to see where they are. One of the things that we included in the program were song lyrics. We included song lyrics because song lyrics right now are highly suggestive of have someone under the influence of alcohol and drugs, and it's very easy to have sex with them. There's no conversation necessary. And then if you pair pop culture up with pornography, that is what a lot of our students are exposed to. So they're not having these conversations. We take rape very seriously, and it's not that we aren't saying that there is a conversation to be had specifically about sexual assault, but we at the time were talking about consent, and we were talking about what you do when consent is withdrawn and what are your options. So if we don't give someone options, what do they do?
But you don't have to give them options, right? They always have that option. Self-gratification is always an option.
Self-gratification is always an option, but it may be the first time that someone has heard them, or that these students have heard someone say, it is okay to do this. It is okay to do this as another option, as opposed to pressuring your partner. We are talking about situations where both people, both students may be in a position where they don't communicate well around these issues. One person may leave the interaction feeling like, okay, that was awkward, but I guess it was okay. And the other person may leave and say, I really didn't want to do that, and this person took advantage of me. And in order to allow students to make the best possible choices, we need to give them real life examples and real life options. And we know that forcible rapes will happen. We know that people will make bad choices even if they are educated. But we are doing all young people a disservice to not talk about it at all.
All right, in our second half hour here, we're going to open up to all of our panelists as we talk about the broader efforts in reducing sexual assault on campus, how they see that going. But before we do that, just one other point. Here's an email from a listener who wanted to remain anonymous. She says, I'm obviously writing with this assumption and hope that RIT has more to their sexual assault awareness education than that one slide. As a young woman, I have been in situations where the strong desire of my partner led to pressure to be intimate, pleading, bargaining, coercion. Maybe in those cases, self-gratification can be a reminder to gentlemen of a certain age and their partners that they are in control of their bodies and desires, and it is not the duty of other people to fulfill them. That is exactly what Darcy and RIT were saying. And frankly, some of the supportive comments from the guests who are Title IX coordinators at other schools have weighed in with. I understand that. As the only man on this panel, I will just say this, Darcy. I know. Gary wrote in earlier and said men's brains aren't even done forming until probably ever, but young to mid-20s, and I get that. But I am shocked at how many stories we hear just like this one. And I say shocked. I'm not surprised. I'm not naive, but shocked every time I hear it, like the one we just got from an anonymous listener, because of how disgusting I find that, the pressure that people can put on. And my one concern is that even in that one slide out of 77, I don't want to give a thumbs up to guys to not change. I think if you don't understand that you need consent at every step of the way, however you want to communicate it with it, you are doing it wrong. Start over. You have a problem. That's the message I would have sent.
And I hear you, Evan. The issue is some of our students haven't heard anything. Mm-hmm. They haven't heard anything. They haven't heard do this, don't do that. They haven't heard anything. And so for the 2,800 students in that room, this was the first time some of them heard anything about what to do when you're in a room with another person. Which is unfortunate. I feel like this education needs to happen a lot sooner. By the time you get to college, you have a lot of freedom. I know that, you've got RAs, but they're not going to be in your bedroom. They're not going to be monitoring what you do. I've had parents contact me to say, I really would like my daughter to be in an all-girls hall, because I think if she's in an all-girls hall, the chances of her being assaulted are less. And then I have to talk to that parent and say, you know, I understand your desire to keep your daughter safe. Maybe there's some conversations you need to have with your daughter about her acquaintances. I have three children, 16 and 13-year-old daughters and a 4-year-old son. And my hope, short of me being in the room with them when they have a sexual experience, which would be really creepy, is that they hear me in the back of their mind saying, okay, you need to be checking in with your partner. Okay, you need to be talking to your partner. You need to be asking questions. If you feel too weird talking about it, you're probably not ready to do this. And that's what I'm going to tell all three of my children. I know that the pressure on my son might be a little different. And hopefully with the help of my husband, we will have him prepared. My hope is that if any of my three children were to assault someone, they can never say they didn't know. And what we're finding is we have students saying, I didn't know. No one ever taught me that I couldn't have sex with this person under these circumstances. No one ever told me that getting someone drunk to loosen them up was not a good way to get consent. They've never heard these messages. And so it's difficult for us to have these conversations, but we have to keep having them, because we've been in too many situations where a student is asked to leave the university because of a choice they made. And I have to wonder, if you had more information, would you have made a better choice?
To Darcy's point, Ben on Twitter has a rebuke for my comment earlier. I said self-gratification is always an option. Ben said, that's a misguided statement, Evan. Many people are taught that it is disgusting, dirty, a lesser form of gratification, etc. And that's exactly what Darcy was saying. So Ben, I take that point, and maybe I am myopic here, and I'm glad that you're part of the conversation on Twitter. Ben, listeners, if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Reminder for parents, probably not a good hour to have kids listening, some adult themes here, but we are talking about some important things, and let's be frank here. RIT took some heat for that slide in their presentation last week. They did not have to be here today. Darcy Lane Williams, the director of RIT Center for Women and Gender, is here. We appreciate that. Also here is Morgan Levy, the Title IX coordinator at the University of Rochester, Karen Vicks, Title IX coordinator at Nazareth College, Tamara Kenny, Title IX coordinator at SUNY Geneseo. We'll take our only break of the hour and come back with the conversation of sexual assault on campus here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections. New York voters this fall are going to decide whether to hold a constitutional convention, opening up our state's constitution for an entire rewrite. You heard recently on this program from those who want it to happen, who want the constitutional convention. What are the arguments against it? You'll hear from the no side on Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Some of the critics of the movement in recent years, I would say movement, I think it's probably fair to call it a movement, toward more really overt consent. I mean, is it fair to say that this is at least much more of a conversation than it was certainly when I went to college? And so some of the critics out there, the people like Christina Hoff Summers at the American Enterprise Institute, who have said that we have almost taken this to a form of trying to catch somebody in an act of assault that they are not committing. They've pushed back and said that we've become so wishy-washy about consent that we're almost leaving the door open to criminalize behavior. And that people like Summers have been really, you know, sort of critical of universities for being so obsessed with consent that we should trust adults to be adults. And Morgan, I'm going to start with you. How do you feel about that kind of criticism of the movement in recent years?
I think it's actually the exact opposite. So I think we've gone from a place where our culture and society has said you just have to wait for the romantic music to come on, and then everyone knows that that means that you're ready to have sex. You just have to read body language, and you should know just from body language that that means this person wants to have sex, to an expectation that you're actually going to have a clear conversation about what you want to happen. So I think we've gone the opposite, from being wishy-washy and trying to interpret people's body language to just have a direct conversation with someone and get clear about what it is that you want to do and make sure that they're on the same page and they want to do that same activity. I think from the criticism that I've heard is that, you know, we're taking out the romance, or we're making it too legalistic in that moment. And I think it's pretty unromantic. It's pretty unsexy if you find out after having sex with someone that that person didn't want to do that. So I strongly disagree with that perspective. I think that we've gone a really long way in the right direction. And I think it's hard, right, to like shift our culture from this, we just read body language, to we have to have conversations. And people who are not experienced at having those types of conversations in the moment will say, that's going to kill the mood. But I think doing the types of things that we all do at our college campuses, giving specific examples of the type of language to use, having peers say, hey, this is what I do in this moment, this is the language I use when I'm asking for consent, can really help us shift towards a place where people are not getting hurt. And I'm of a firm belief that 99.9% of the population doesn't want to hurt another person. And if we can give them the tools so that they can make sure that they're not hurting them, what a great service we're doing, not just for these students in our particular universities, but also for our culture overall.
Okay. Tamara, what do you think?
I agree a lot with what Morgan is saying. I think Summers and some other folks have really talked about the fact that we're in some cases taking away that ability to say yes or no, and by the definition of our policies, students have to get consent. And I think what we're really trying to say is very much what RHE is trying to say in their message, is that we're trying to give students tools to have healthy sexual relations with each other, in the sense that no one is getting harmed and both parties are aware of what's okay, what's not okay, and that, you know, they're still under a tremendous amount of pressure from their peers, and they have a lot of stereotypes that they're trying to live up to. You know, when you go to college, I'm supposed to do X, Y, and Z. And I think we're trying to step back and say that you have these choices, and that we want you to make good, healthy, positive choices for yourself and your partners.
Okay. Karen Vicks from Nazareth College, what do you think?
I would also, you know, a lot with what Morgan said, and most of our students aren't out looking to assault another student. Mm-hmm. That's not what their intention is. But these conversations haven't happened before. And, you know, going with body language, what body language is indicating I'm not interested in sex anymore? And what body language is saying, you know, is welcoming it? It's, you know, and that's part of the education and the conversations that we're having as well. And if no one's ever had that conversation, then how do they understand that? And, you know, so really taking the pulse of our students and finding, I think that's the key, finding what their needs are and what things that they're looking for, and going with their questions, and then programming around that is what's key.
I'd like to ask our guests about a separate issue that came up almost immediately after sort of the kerfuffle last week about the RIT slide that hasn't come up this hour, I think because of some of the context and explanation we've heard from Darcy, but I think it is worth visiting, which is some of the initial criticism of RIT's admonition, again, if you're just jumping into the conversation now, it might be without the context that Darcy would like it to have. But one of their admonitions was, you know, in sexual settings, especially for young students who haven't had that experience before, that, you know, you want to be very clear on consent, that your partner's job, they don't owe you any sexual gratification, and that self-gratification can be an alternative if you don't have the consent, and that, you know, in some ways it can prevent something really sort of wrong happening. And one of the pushbacks was, well, that misunderstands what sexual assault is about. That sexual assault is about control, especially rape, is about control and power and less about sex. I feel like lately, maybe it's just that I've seen the headlines and maybe I'm just noticing them more often, but there's been a couple of headlines in just recent months or in the last year pushing back even on that idea. For example, just a couple of months ago in May, Catherine Ripley, a feminist writer for The Huffington Post, wrote a piece saying that rape is about control, power, and about sex. And she wrote, quote, "I've come to conclude through both my education and my personal experience that the rape is not about sex claim is not only nonsensical, it is damaging. The most glaring question is this. If rape were only about power and not about sex, why does the rapist engage in a sexual act? Why not acquire power some other way?" End quote. In Psychology Today, Noam Spencer wrote a piece called "Rape is not only about power, it's also about sex." He says, "Meaningful human events have more than one reason and are shaped by more than a single motive or force. Rape is a human event. It is motivated by more than one thing. Arguing that rape is not about sex is akin to asserting that gun violence is not about guns. Both claims betray an incomplete and politicized view." We'll go around the table. I'll start with Morgan. What do you make of that? And does that pertain to this question, you know, that goes back to the slide and helping people understand context in these settings? When it comes to sexual assault and rape, you know, how do you view kind of the roots and the reasons?
So I think that the distancing from rape is about sex was really helpful for our fields, because I think a lot of times people were thinking about kind of exactly the misperception people had when they looked at that slide, you know, that RIT had produced, that it was really about sexual desire. It was about gratification. I think it is about power and control. It's about not caring about the impact of your actions on the person who you're attempting to have sex with. So while I think it was helpful to first have that distancing in our field of between sex and power and control, I think I would agree that it certainly does involve sex. And perhaps that's not the right framework through which we need to be looking at this topic.
All right, Karen, what do you think?
I think it's a lot about, you know, again, about not understanding. Not understanding the situations that they may be in, and not understanding how to read their partner. But it certainly, I mean, the sex is certainly in there.
Okay. Darcy?
I think it depends on who we're talking about. Okay. So if you are talking about a rapist in the traditional sense, when you think of that word rapist, who are we talking about? We're talking about, I've heard students say deviant, a deviant who is attacking people. And for stranger rape, for people jumping out of the bushes, it is about power to overcome someone and do what you want to them. In these situations with our students, what we're seeing is it is an intersection where the desire to have what you want and dismiss what your partner wants meets sex. So if you really want sex and your partner is saying no, and you clearly know your partner's saying no, and you proceed to do it anyway, you are using your power against that partner. So it is both things. But if you're not picking up on any of the signs they're giving you because you don't even know what to look for, we have to ask, is it the same thing? And I don't think that they are the same thing.
Okay. Tamara?
I would agree with what everyone has said at the table. I think it, again, goes down to what Karen was talking about, that ability to have that conversation about that healthy relationship during the act of sex, and that our students don't have that language. They don't have those skills. They don't know how to ask. Sometimes don't even know what they're asking. And it does happen in the context of an intimate act.
Sarah writes to the program, Evan, thanks for covering this topic. I saw the image and was initially shocked by it out of context. I went to RIT and am familiar with the unique culture of the school being a mix of students with vastly different social levels and experiences. The comments about not knowing what to expect during sex is dead on. This is something that young adults should not have to learn through trial and error due to the trauma that can be caused for both parties. I'm a huge fan of this new approach of teaching communication and ongoing active consent for both parties. This may seem very basic to some, but hearing real-life options would have been very beneficial to my and many other colleges, others' college experience. I am one of many who have left an experience feeling coerced and icky. Hearing that your partner's gratification is not your responsibility is empowering. Truly thank you for making strides to stop anyone else from having bad experiences. So this is a case where someone saw the slide, was not happy with what they saw, but here's RIT's explanation, I think, has changed their feeling on that. Sheila in Honeyway Falls next on the phone. Go ahead, Sheila.
Hi. I would just like to mention that there was an article in the New York Times yesterday about someone who had gone back to their alma mater and interviewed people about consent because they were a pretty liberal school, and it's changed, the meaning has changed a little bit, and they said that they had interviewed a young man who was saying, yeah, we have this talk in freshman year, and I would never think of having sex with a girl unless I had asked her, is this okay? Yeah, it's awkward for about 5 minutes, but I'd never have to know if I'm doing the wrong thing or if I'm doing something that my partner doesn't want me to do. So in RIT's defense, I think RIT is a big campus. It has a lot of people. And they're trying to build a community, and they're trying to build an ethos. And I even though that slide was kind of, my children had Winnie the Pooh stuff in their bedrooms when they were kids, and I probably won't look at that the same way again. But it's a good effort to build that ethos and let people understand why they're doing it, and just think about what you're thinking when you're a part of that community. So hopefully these skills will transfer into the real world once they get out of college. And I say thank you for all the proactive work that you're doing.
Sheila, thank you for the phone call. Darcy, some response to that?
Thank you, Sheila. It's really important for us to make sure that students have the skills they need. And there were too many times that we were sitting in conduct hearings, hearing students who are about to be suspended or expelled say, tearfully say, I wish someone had told me this. I wish I knew. I had no idea. I had no idea I was impacting this person this way. One of the things that we had during the program that I want to mention is we had a poll everywhere, interactive texting option. So students could text in responses to questions that we put up on a very large screen, the same screen that had that slide in question. And one of the questions that we had up there was, do people clearly articulate their sexual desires and needs? 88% of our audience said no. 88%. 1,500 students texted in. That was the max number of responses we could get. And 88% said no. So that is our students saying, I don't think people can clearly state what they want sexually. So imagine that 88% of our students going into sexual situations where on both sides they're thinking, well, I don't think I know how to tell you what I want, and I don't think you know how to tell me what you want, and we're going to do this dance and hope no one gets hurt in the process. We don't want that to happen. It was awkward. It was definitely awkward. The students felt very strange at certain points in time with this woman they've never seen before, getting very graphic about ways to ask for what you want. But we also gave them the tools to, okay, this is awkward in this room full of this many people, but after you leave here, here are tools available for you to learn more about this. And if you never have sex during your time on this campus, fine. But if you do, we hope that you're prepared to have the conversations you need to have.
All right, down to our last 2 minutes, and a really good email from Emily will help us close the program. All of our guests can weigh in. She says, I respect that Evan is trying to be respectful of parents and children, but I do believe this is a conversation for children to be listening to of a reasonable age, of course. This could be a start of a conversation that needs to be had starting at an age far before they reach college. Ultimately, what we're doing is teaching students to respect other people that they're in a relationship with and with asexual relationship. For a long time, women were viewed as tools for sex or sex objects. That's the mindset that we need to shift, and we need to have these conversations with our kids. And then she goes on to ask, and this is where our guests can jump in, are there local or community resources available to survivors? Let me just say, Emily, great email and a great point. I only offer that caution because I didn't know how specific we were going to get on. The actual slide itself did have a bit of a crude acronym. I think we can all agree on that. And I wanted to be sensitive to parents. But point taken, and I absolutely endorse starting early. Healthy relationships, respectful relationships. They do this starting at age 4 in some countries in Scandinavia. So why not? So thank you, Emily. So let's go around the table. Tamara, resources for survivors. What would you say to that? That's a great question.
Sure. I think that depending upon your campus, you probably have some fantastic resources for survivors. At Geneseo, we're lucky enough to have an advocate from Restore, which is a sexual assault service here in Rochester, 3 days a week. And we also have an advocate from Chances and Changes, which is a local dating, domestic violence, and stalking shelter, and we also have an advocate there 3 days a week, as well as many national and local hotline numbers.
All right, got to be tight. Morgan, go ahead.
Same thing. We have folks from Restore who come to our campus quite often. There's also lots of resources on our campus, and I do just want to emphasize how much I think all of us who do this work think that there needs to be better education in the high schools and middle schools because it's a little bit too late.
Wasn't that a good email from Emily? I think she was right about
that. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, same services. We have Restore. We also partner with Willow Domestic Violence Resource. You know, again, our role is to be an advocate for all our students and to teach them the skills that they're going to need lifelong.
Okay. Darcy.
And same for RIT. We partner with Restore and Willow and our local partners. And we also have several on-campus resources that students can utilize.
I just want to once again thank all of our guests who've come to us from RIT, University of Rochester, Nazareth College, SUNY Geneseo, all of our guests sharing their thoughts. And again, RIT stepping up, saying, I know the community's talking about it and some people didn't like it. Obviously, you turned some people today, Darcy, with more background and information. And to those you didn't, I know they at least respected the fact that you showed up. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And to all of our other guests, thank you.
Thank you.
Really appreciate the work you do. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we're right back with you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.